Let's Hear for the Girls is brought to you in partnership with Speak Studios and Speak Boise.
Speak Boise is a community-driven studio space where voices from all walks of life can speak and be heard.
You can find them on Instagram and Facebook at Speak Studios and Speak Boise at their website, speakstudios.com. Speak Studios,
speak and be heard.
Let's Hear for the Girls is brought to you by Instant Imprints. Promote better with Instant Imprints. Instant Imprints are Boise's visual communication experts and your place for everything you need to promote your business, club, school, or group. As a locally owned business, Instant Imprint specializes in making your organization more visible with custom brand apparel, embroidery, promotional items, print services, and wide format printing for signs, as well as banners and vehicle graphics. You want better ways to get noticed? Visit Instant Imprints at instantimprints.com Boise or call 208 Imprint. That's 208-467-7468. Yeah.
Hi. How are you?
Good. I love when you wear this kind of outfit.
Thank you.
I think this is like premium Erin.
Wow. I was really feeling myself this morning.
You should. Your hair looks great, too.
Thank you. I did my hair. I styled it.
You look very good.
Thank you. And I got this from Amazon, my shirt, on Prime Day.
Thanks, Jeff Bezos.
Well, I feel bad. I know. But it was really cheap, obviously. Well, what the fuck's going on, man? How
Jesus
are you?
Christ.
We haven't seen each other in
I know. We're just like,
6 years.
I see you. You don't see me.
Okay. Right here, right now.
I'm not doing it.
Yes,
I
you
see
are.
You all the I see you frequently. I see you like walking. I see you in meetings. I'll see you at like,
okay.
I'll see you also at like food places. And I'm like, there goes my little Erin.
When did you, were you at Subway?
I'm not, I was not at Subway, but.
Do you have like spies or something?
Mm-hmm. The streets be talking.
The streets be talking
talk
about
me.
Yeah. Erin ordered a veggie delight.
Ah, that's my, well, I'm vegan, so.
Obviously.
I love a veggie delight.
Me too, honestly.
Love me a veggie delight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we haven't seen each other in a minute.
Are you doing good?
There's a topic for the next podcast.
Oh, shit. Okay.
My life is a living hell.
No.
No, I've been doing all right. It's, I was expecting, you know, we work at a college and, you know, for most colleges, especially small ones like ours, like summertime for most employees, or it's like prime time realness. Cause like, you know, there's not a lot to do.
Right.
And for some reason for me, like summertime this summer has been hell. Like it's just been rough.
Is it now that everything's open? Everybody wants to
yes,
do things
literally
all the time.
Yesterday I got 6 calls for like a quinceañera, for a retirement party, for like a conference, for trainings. And I'm just like,
cool it.
It's just me, people. It's
yeah,
just me
it's
in
just
this house.
Me.
Yeah. So it's been rough. I Damn. Have a feeling you have been enjoying your summer, though.
It's been pretty good. There's some things that need to be figured out with like orientation and things like that.
Yes.
But ultimately, yes, in comparison to the school year.
Yeah.
Way less busy.
Yes. I'm excited for we're entering in July. We kick off our July at our job. With a break, we have break week, so that should be a good reset. I'm excited to come back and re-energize, but yeah.
Guess what I'm doing?
What are you doing?
I'm going to my parents' house on Friday, Friday, and I'm going to stay until like Tuesday, and then I'm going to visit my best friend Ashley in Colorado.
Oh.
I'm flying out on Thursday, coming back Sunday, $88 round trip.
Shut your filthy
Say
mouth.
Less.
Shut your mouth.
Frontier.
Ooh. I've heard interesting things about Frontier.
Don't know anything.
Hey.
Don't know anything about it other than it's $88.
Well, I hope you have your life insurance policy updated.
What, do they crash a lot?
Yeah, I've heard they're like, I don't know about that. I just heard like Frontier and Allegiant, like.
Yeah.
I hope you believe in like some kind of God.
No, I just accept my fate when I get on an airplane.
Oh, God.
Like, this could be it.
What have you been watching this, Erin?
I've watched a lot of movies lately.
Oh, awesome.
Other than keeping up with The Bachelorette, which...
Questionable.
Whatever. But Setherscope and I have watched several movies lately. We watched Stand By Me, which I'd never seen before. That's like your 80s River Phoenix, Jerry O'Connell, like four, you know.
Yeah.
It was... I think it's like everybody watches it once.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Seth and I were like, which one would be our kid? And so that was a fun game we played.
The Straits.
And then we watched No Country for Old Men the other day.
Interesting.
God, I love that that movie. It's so good. It's so good. And then I watched Josie and the Pussycats on HBO Max.
What a classic.
My brother and I stan that movie.
That's a good movie.
It is a fucking good movie.
Who's the actress that plays like the their manager for the record company? What's her name? And she has a weird little lisp in the movie.
Oh, yeah. That's Parker Posey.
Parker Posey.
Yeah.
What an interesting woman.
She's in some movies.
She's like John Cusack's sister.
Joan Cusack?
Yeah, where they really great, like quirky, weird characters.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
That's a good one. I need to watch that this weekend.
And we have been watching a few episodes of WandaVision.
Oh, good. Because Loki is out. Good. So you need to.
I know. I need to catch up on
Winter Soldier.
Oh, yeah. We haven't even.
The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. So I can watch Loki. Yeah. Well, Goodness sakes, good for you.
What about you?
Literally nothing. I mean, I come home. I just finished up my summer semester. So summer school is over. So that was taking up a good chunk of my life. And so that one's done. And so now I'm like, oh, I can watch movies. And I just get home. This is my routine. Are you ready for this? This is when I know something's wrong with me or I'm hella old. I don't know which one it is. I go get off. I head straight to the Albertsons Marketplace off of Fairview. Mm. They have these salads that are like $8. Great. They're huge. I split it in half. I have two salads for 2 days.
Love it.
I crawl in the bed and I turn on to America's Next Top Model. And that's all I've been doing.
Do your thing.
That's all I can do. That's all I can muster
that's
up.
That's okay.
ANTM, you know, the two J's and a bunch of girls crying about a pixie cut.
Yeah.
And a terrible picture. And Tyra passing out randomly and calling people fat. That's the thing. That show, my God.
Problematic.
So fucked up. So entertaining.
Yeah. Very entertaining, but also like,
and it's not just Tyra, everybody. So that's what makes me go like, okay, maybe we can't be too mad at Tyra. I mean, yes, we could be mad at Tyra and the production.
Janet was always my least, but the first supermodel.
Oh my God.
Is that even true?
I'll have to research that. I highly doubt it. She would correct Tyra every episode. But like even the girls were problematic as fuck.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it was just like, okay, maybe we all were just really ignorant.
Look at us.
Yeah.
Look how far we've come.
Okay, we are going to talk about a very interesting movie. I would say, I think if you look at the movie landscape, this is a film, a film landscape. I think this is a film that has not gotten its roses enough.
Oh, I would agree with that.
I don't think it's talked about for people who really like movies, but for people, the general public, I don't think the general public knows enough about this movie or have actually seen this movie. So
that's true.
You're running the ship this time.
So. I am. So the film we're talking about today is We Need to Talk About Kevin. And is a doozy.
It's a doozy.
Okay, so you ready for the basics?
Yes, let's get
on. Okay, we need to talk about Kevin. Came out in 2011. Directed by Lynn Ramsey. She's a Scottish director who's done 5 short films and feature films like The Rat Catcher, which was 1991, my birth year. And You Were Never Really Here, which I saw in theaters with Stethoscope. It has Joaquin Phoenix in it, another indie film. Mm-hmm. Okay. It was good. I remember it being good.
I don't remember that one.
But also one of those, like, if you're into movies, you would know. Yeah. But if you're not, then it probably wouldn't have come on your radar. Right. Yeah. So it was also written by Lynn Ramsey as well. And Rory Stewart Kinnear. This is the only writing credit for Rory, as he's done mostly like music department stuff. And he was part of the score writing for this film as well, which... The score was
great
as well. Soundtrack, so good job, amazing. Rory. Lionel Shriver wrote the novel, same name. The novel was released in 2003. So there's quite a bit of time between the novel release and this, which doesn't really happen anymore.
No, right? I mean, a lot of times if a movie or if a book is hot, the rights are sold immediately.
Right? Because what did we say about The Help? That the movie rights were sold before the book was even published, right?
Yeah.
And so obviously for something like this, it's less attention grabbing. It's definitely more gritty. It's more indie, if you will.
I did some research. Oh. And surprisingly enough, the book was extremely popular.
Right.
And so it did pick up, the rights were picked up pretty quickly. There was a lot of changing of, not so much changing of hands, but funding.
Yep.
It was hard to get it funded. So that's why I think the gap exists. It's not so much because
It wasn't of interest.
Yeah. It was just like, who can fund this?
I can see that because, again, it's not like.
Yeah.
It's a,
it's a hard film. It's hard a tough book. One. It's hard film.
Have you read the book?
No, I haven't. I read excerpts. Is that the word?
Yeah, excerpts.
Mm-hmm. Great job, Colin.
Good job, Colin.
Because I was so fascinated by this movie. And I wanted to see the difference. But the interesting part is the book is letters.
Okay.
Written. And when the book is written from the female character to her husband. So she's writing
fascinating.
Letters.
Fascinating.
And so that is how.
Oh, I can't wait to read this now.
Yeah. So it's very much different because I'm assuming that's your next step is kind of explaining the movie.
Yeah.
Giving a synopsis. But yeah.
Yes.
It is very different the way that the movie is framed.
Interesting. So we're just going to do a quick synopsis of the film. Essentially, we have this married couple.
Yeah, hold on. Go watch the movie.
Yeah, go.
Here's your quick break. Watching the movie.
Watching the movie.
And over. Now,
and
welcome.
And it's finished. Credits theme. Okay. Welcome back.
Because we're going straight into it.
We're going straight into it.
Barely any breakdown.
Okay. Little synopsis. We have a married couple played by Tilda Swinton, John C. Reilly. They have a child named Kevin, played by Ezra Miller, who's a fucking weirdo from the time that he comes out of the womb. But he
comes out just,
just a weirdo. There's lots of things. But essentially, you see the relationship between Kevin and his mom and Kevin and his dad. Very, very different. It causes a strain on the couple's relationship because the dad is not seeing what the mom is seeing, right? And so that leads to a very dramatic event at the end.
Yes. And to be fair, the movie really focuses on Kevin and Tilda Swinton's character. What's her name again?
Eva.
I knew it. Eva. There are other characters kind of float in and out.
Mm-hmm. But those are really the main thing. So we have our stars, Tilda Swinton, John C. Reilly, and Ezra Miller. Mm-hmm. So we've talked about Tilda Swinton before. She's one of our favorites. I think that's partially why we wanted to do this film. It's less about women power, but the focus is so much on Tilda Swinton's character, Eva. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of themes to talk about.
Yeah.
But she plays Eva, like I said, and we know her from films like Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, Michael Clayton, Orlando. We can see her in Pinocchio next. And yes. And then this film called 3,000 Years of Longing, which is post-production.
Ooh.
Okay. Sounds kind of sounds intriguing, good. No? John C. Reilly plays Franklin, the husband, and we know him from Chicago, Step Brothers, Talladega Nights, Cyrus, and Wreck-It Ralph. We can see him next in Ultra.
He plays Ralph?
Yeah, he's
Ralph. Oh my God, that makes
Ralph.
So much sense now.
Does it not?
Gosh, he's good.
I know.
That's one of my favorite Pixar movies.
Range. He has. And we can see him next in Ultra City Smiths, which is currently filming, and it's going to be on Stars. So okay. That's a TV show. Ezra Miller plays Kevin, or teenage Kevin, because there's three different Kevins, right? We see him from the time he's a little kid, and then when he's about 8 years old, and then when he's in high school. We know him from Perks of Being a Wallflower. I think that's probably what I know him best from.
First things, yeah.
He's in Californication, the TV show with David Duchovny. And he's the Flash in Batman and Superman, or versus Superman, Justice League, Suicide Squad, et cetera, et cetera.
Should be receiving his own movie soon, too.
I think probably, yes. And we can see him next in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them 3.
Oh, yeah.
Where he plays both Credence Barebone and Aurelius Dumbledore.
Oh, God.
I know.
Jesus, man.
I know.
Just pick one. No.
Just pick. And I'm like, who's Credence? But I know Aurelius. Anyway, so let's do some Rotten Tomatoes, shall we?
Yes.
What's our tomato meter, do you think?
78.
Close, 75.
Oh, okay.
Audience score?
65.
78.
Oh, really? Oh, perfect match.
Yes. And our IMDb rating is?
An 8.
7.5.
Oh.
It's okay. Really, really standard across the board.
Yeah.
What would you give this film? Overall, do your thing. We're both really big fans of the film and had seen it before.
No, I'd never seen it.
You hadn't
seen it?
No,
I hadn't seen
it.
Oh,
my mistake. I thought you had.
No, I'd never seen it.
Oh, fuck. We're in for it.
Yeah. It's a hard question. I think I would score a little bit higher than the 7, but I can understand the 7. I would say an 8.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
Yeah, agreed.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. A 7.9, 8.2 in that range.
I, Yeah. Where are we going now? You tell me what to do.
Well, you tell me what to do. So I want to focus first on less about the characters, but more about the stylistic choices of this film.
Oh, okay.
If you would be so kind as to indulge me. Because the film opens, the film is told in vignettes, yes. Your favorite word, and flashbacks. And so I think this is going to sound so fucking pretentious, but pinkies up. To the untrained eye, this would be hard to follow.
Yes.
But for you and I.
We are experts in the study of filmography.
Not everybody likes movies like this where you have to really pay attention.
Yeah.
Right?
I definitely feel like, I will say this. When I first started the movie, I was like, this is awesome. What the fuck is going on? So you start off with Tilda Swinton in, like, it looks like somewhere like Madrid or somewhere in Spain.
Mediterranean somewhere.
In this like festival, and they're throwing tomatoes at each other. Mm-hmm. Honestly, that was one, my first, starting off with a critique. I know.
Do it. Do your thing.
I was like, what the hell does this have to connect to anything? But I do get the concept. You know what I mean? It really started off with this very, there's tons of people, tons of red. Red is throughout the film.
Yes.
It's the running theme throughout the film. It's the color of the film.
Right.
And you just kind of see Tilda Swinton's character in a moment of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And so then from there, that kind of starts this cascading effect of like these different vignettes. And you don't know the timeline of the film until you get towards like almost towards the end. And then you can start understanding like what it is.
Right.
Which is really interesting. Cause like I started thinking about like what other films have we seen this in, this kind of like breaking of time.
Yeah.
And reminding me a lot of like Memento.
Oh yes. Yes. I had that thought as well.
Yeah. And there was another film that I can't, now my brain is escaping me. But if you kind of reference Memento again, it's just like until the end, do you realize, you know what I mean? What order the movie
is importance of those pieces at the beginning are like, oh, so for this film, we see her doing like that festival thing. And then later you see her with John C. Reilly's character and they're in a bigger city and they're kind of, they've obviously been drinking and she's smoking. They seem very in love.
Yeah.
And the importance of that later on is that she really misses that life.
Right. And that's the biggest thing is that you automatically get is like, this is a woman who knows who she is.
Yes.
She is not a stay-at-home mom.
Nope.
She is not a little miss housewife.
Nope.
She is a world traveler. She is her own woman on her own right. She is Ava. You're Ava. Eva.
Eva.
She's Eva.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? She is no one's wife.
Right.
Which is really surprising because the next couple of scenes, she's pregnant. Like she's...
Right.
And she's like in the hospital holding, you see John C. Reilly holding the baby.
That's the weirdest hospital room I've ever seen.
God, I loved it because it was so stale. And I want to just jump right off here.
Do it.
The interesting about this movie is like, as we said, is in these moments of vignette. And the first thing that I kind of started noticing, and when I started like kind of reading up on other reviews, one thing I started noticing, especially I love Reddit, and a lot of people.
Oh, I love Reddit.
Discussion a lot of people are having was this like unreliable narrator.
Ooh.
Right.
Ooh.
We're just gonna jump right towards the end. We're just gonna spoiler alert.
Okay, the movie came out 10 years ago.
So you haven't seen this, it's your fault.
Yeah.
Kevin kills everybody. Like Kevin is a mass murderer. Kevin is a psychopath.
Yeah. A sociopath.
Mm-hmm. And so by the end you realize that Kevin has murdered his father, his little sister, and multiple classmates.
Mm-hmm.
The town that they live in hates Eva, hates Kevin. And so you see this woman who is remembering past events,
mm-hmm.
thinking about her current life.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't know when you see a scene like, and I'm going to relate this back to the hospital. You said that was the weirdest ass hospital. And you start to realizing, oh my gosh, you're actually seeing the movie from her, like if she was actually watching the movie herself.
Right.
So you don't know if that's what the actual hospital looked like.
Right. Or that's what it felt like.
That was the emotions. And that was probably the most interesting part is like, you can't tell every scene in the movie until you realize, oh my gosh, I'm not watching this movie from like a third perspective. You know what I mean? Like if I'm actually in the movie watching the scenes, I'm watching the movie as if she's watching the movie.
Right.
So you do not know what is truth and, you know,
know, what is the reality of the situation?
Right.
Which really makes it interesting because, like, you don't know who's lying, who, how bad Kevin was. Was Kevin this asshole? Was Eva, I don't think I'm saying Eva.
It kind of sounded like they said Eva a few times, but yeah. it is Eva.
If Eva was this, like, awesome mother, if she was this terrible mother, you don't know because you can't rely on her because she is going through this grief of losing her husband, losing her child, and then having her son kill everybody in the town, pretty much.
Right, exactly. And so, and it is a super interesting way to watch it. And I think I definitely picked up on that stuff a little bit more the second time around than the first time. But going to, you know, the situation, right? Because in the film, we see that Kevin has been a difficult child since he was young. Mm-hmm. He refuses to potty train. He is incredibly, like, rude and mean to his mother, Eva.
Right.
And is,
even that from birth.
He even was from birth, defiant.
Crying, wouldn't speak, wouldn't learn how.
There's no connection, right? And you see her being like, what the fuck is wrong with me? What is wrong with this kid? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not connecting to my child. But then as he grows up, you can see that Kevin is playing this little game of being a little fucker to his mom. But to his dad, it's like, Dad, you're home.
Yeah.
And so anytime, so he's kind of orchestrated this thing for his whole life, mm-hmm. even from the time he was a child, where Eva will try to talk to her husband, Franklin, played by John C. Reilly, and be like, you know, and he says in the film, boys will be boys. This is just how they act. We need to buy a house, right? They need to have a backyard.
He's only going
to
be a child for this long.
Like, so let's get out of this apartment. And she's like, there's no fucking way I'm leaving this city.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's the interesting part. A lot of the scenes weren't actually, there is a lack of dialogue in this film.
True.
There's not a lot of dialogue. So a lot of the times when you're hearing the scenes and going back to this, like, unreliable narrator, this it's like, voiceovers. So you're seeing the scene, you see them, like, driving to their new home, and then you hear this conversation of, like, his boys will be boys, or he's only a child. And so you don't actually see them together having this conversation. You hear it in the background while a scene is playing out, and it's just the visual, which I was just like,
it was amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing. Because again, it's going back to, like, either A, she's remembering, or B, these are the thoughts she was having in her head while living this life. Those conversations might have never happened.
Right.
And we just don't know.
Right. And I'm looking at this film. I've chosen to, like, watch it and critique it from, like, a very realistic narrative.
Oh, see, I took this, it the other way.
Yeah, which I think, but that's what the film leaves room for, which is amazing. Yeah. And you don't get that a lot.
Yeah, you don't.
I think you're right. This film has not had its credit. It has not been given its roses. If it were made today and came out today, I think it would be a little bit different.
Oscar winner. Yeah.
Yeah. And so let's focus on Kevin for a little bit. So we see him as a little kid, and he's obviously disturbed, right? He, like, shits his pants until he's, like, 8 years old, which I'm like,
scene was kill so me. Funny.
So there's a scene in the film where, like, Kevin is still in diapers. He's school aged, 6 to 8 years old.
Yeah, having full ass conversations.
Still in a diaper because he refuses to potty train. And so there's this scene where he's talking to his mom, and he's being very defiant, and he's just kind of this, like, very mature child clearly a very high IQ here, which most sociopaths do have a very high IQ.
Yes.
But just no room for there's not this loving connection at all. He doesn't need his mother. That's very clear.
Yeah.
He's obviously doing this potty training thing or not lack of to be defiant. And so basically he, like, looks her in the eye and, like, shits his pants essentially
twice.
And he does it and she changes him. And I'm like, oh my God, I cannot imagine changing an 8 year old. Good Lord. And then as he's walking away, he kind of does it again. And she's like, you got to be fucking kidding me. And she, in a rage, she takes his arm and throws him against the wall and breaks his arm.
Yes.
And it's not a super violent scene. You know what happens. I mean, it's clear that it's like, oh shit. Like, she lost her cool.
Yeah, the movie lacks, and I think it was a purposeful choice. You never actually see the violence. They always cut it away.
Or you see the aftermath.
Yeah, you see the results.
Absolutely. And so then she goes to the hospital. You know, he gets all, you know, bandaged up. And then all of a sudden, he's all about mom.
Yeah, and when he gets sick.
You know, and then when he gets sick, and now he wants his mom because she's put him in his place, right? And so then dad comes home and he's like, I don't want to talk to you. I only want, you know, I only want mom to read to me.
Yeah.
Right. And another character of the movie is the Robin Hood book. Right.
Yeah.
The Robin Hood book is kind of the central theme because how he kills his family and his classmates is with a bow and arrow.
This is so ridiculous.
Because like,
I'm sorry if I'm running. This is going to be, listen, this is no offense to any family who's gone through the tragedy of.
Oh, God, what are you going to say?
No. But like for me, if I saw a fucker in a bow and arrow, I'm like whooping his ass. Like.
Oh, totally.
I'm not going to be like, I'm going to come through and like whoop ass.
Strength.
Like,
yeah.
I'm sorry. I didn't. That was the one part of the movie. I was like, a bow and arrow people. Like, I don't know. That was a little odd.
Yeah. But it's,
that was very like fanciful.
Fanciful. Yes, exactly. Because you're like, why? But that.
I did not understand.
But it was kind of like the long con, right? Because he's been practicing archery for so long. And he's just been planning it. Yeah. Very interesting. But there's those times when Kevin, like, that's the only time in the movie we see that Kevin like prefers his mom and like,
yeah. Well, I think it was interesting cause it taps into this idea of like, what is the motive? And like, I just got done taking a developmental psychology course.
Oh my gosh.
And an educational psychology
course.
Hello,
Freud. Yeah, oh my like, God. Literally.
But there's this comment, like in the class, we consistently talked about, you know, especially in our developmental or educational like classroom management and like classroom behavior and like, you know, how can you condition children? And one of the first things they teach you is like you do the least impactful practice first. And the first thing you do is ignore, because so many times children just want attention. And so that's looking at it, like that was the central theme I saw for Kevin, was he just wanted attention the entire time. Every action he took was for attention. Even, and we could talk about this now, unless you want to talk about it later, the scene, the ending, even murdering his family, his classmate, was for attention of his mother. Like the whole movie, I felt like it was a sick, psycho mama's boy who just wanted his mother's attention. Solely, he wanted 100% of her attention,
but not in the way of like,
not in like a loving, like literally he's just like, I want you to stare at me, I want you to,
yes,
I want you, I want to own you,
right? It's about ownership and it's about dominance.
Yes.
It's not like, oh, I was neglected as a child and all I want is for my parents to like notice me. It's not like that,
right?
He wants this hold over his mother.
Right. A good example of this is like, and it's like full ownership, like full ownership, because so when they finally move into the suburb, because they got to get out the city to raise this little fucker, she has one room in the house, which is her office, and gorgeous. She just decorates it toe to ceiling in maps, because she used to be a world traveler. She used to write.
Oh yeah.
She was a traveler. What is that term?
Travel writer.
Yeah, writer. After you Bourdain.
Yeah.
If you would.
Sure.
And so she just covers the room with maps and artifacts and like masks and decorative items she collected while on her travels. And so he comes in and he's like, this looks stupid, this is dumb. And at first, like when he said that, I was offended. Like, right. That little fucker, he knew what he was doing, because as an adult, I was like offended, and kids don't easily offend me.
Right. And that just shows like the very high intelligence that this he cuts to the jugular.
And so she was pretty much like being a good parent. She's like, you know, we all want things to make us special. Everyone has a room in the house. This is my room. And so he was like, this is a stupid room. So she goes outside the room to do something, and she comes back and he literally has drawn and doodled,
painted
every surface of the wall. Which is interesting. Again, going back, like, how could he done that in like 5 seconds?
Right.
Like, clearly something, like, again, her memory, either she's exaggerating, or it's like it wasn't like that big of a deal,
he did have like a squirt gun that he put in paint and then sprayed all over the wall. So that would have been efficient.
But again, like you can't, you can't be sure.
Yeah.
But again, it's just like anything this woman cherished and loved and that was of her own, that defined who she was outside of being a mother, he wanted, outside of being his mother.
His mother. Right.
He wanted to destroy.
Because he was very disturbing and upsetting towards his little sister.
Yes.
And there's a big age gap there, right? In the film, she's probably like six or seven.
Yeah.
When she gets killed by her brother, who's 15, right? 15 or 16. 16, yeah. And so, yeah, that is an interesting thing about, you know, he'll destroy anything that she loves, essentially.
Yeah.
And that started with her life.
Yeah.
But the thing I like about this film is it doesn't necessarily paint her as the perfect mother. She's just a parent, right? And so I would have been a little, you know, a little disappointed in the film had it painted her as like Susie Homemaker, I'm just the best mother in the world.
No.
But it wasn't like that. She was a parent. She fucked up sometimes, but ultimately she was trying to be a good mom.
Well, it painted her as like a real woman who was like, I, as a person who never wants children in their life.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's like maybe a 2% chance that I will have a child in my life.
Yeah.
I saw her and I saw reality.
Yeah.
Like I saw myself as someone who's not interested in having children, who's someone who wants to travel the world, someone who has goals. And not trying to say you can't have it both.
Right.
But let's face the reality. It's hard as fuck to take care of a little snot-nosed human being and do all those things.
Right.
It takes either an incredible amount of money and resource, or it takes hard work and determination. And mm-hmm. somewhere you're still going to fuck up. And so that's what I saw, as a real person who was struggling. Like in the beginning, when the baby was crying all the time, clearly postpartum, dealing with a partner.
Totally.
And again, we don't know how much John C. Reilly was actually involved. Like he tended like love on and dote on Kevin, but we don't know. Maybe he was super supportive and she was just so in her head about having to like leave her life and having to raise a child that she couldn't recognize he was trying to help. But again, you just saw a person who was having problems with a partner, who had to have a child that she really didn't really want. And you just saw a real human being trying to struggle with the burden of raising children.
Well, right. But you see her connect so well with her daughter. Her daughter is sweet and loving.
I want to know why you think she did.
I think it's because she, okay, I'm pregnant. I have this child, right? And it turns out like Kevin. And you're like, what the fuck is this? And she was wanting, if you remember in the film, she wants to terminate the second pregnancy. Because she goes to the kitchen and she clearly has a little baby bump. And then Kevin says, you're fat.
Yeah.
And so then the next scene you see Eva and Franklin in the bedroom. And he's like, what? I don't get a say in this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clearly about, I don't want to have another child, because she's afraid that it's going to be the same situation. And so then it comes out with this, then, okay, fine. They go through with it. And then it's this sweet little girl who loves her mom and is goofy and just a normal kid.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think she's like, oh my God, like,
it wasn't me.
It wasn't me.
Yeah.
I'm able to have a normal child and a normal relationship with my child.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's a scene I want to talk about that I thought was really interesting. So she does try to connect with Kevin, and you know, it's his birthday. Hey, I'm going to take you out for, you know, dinner, and we're going to go, you know, golfing or mini golfing or whatever. They're at the golf course. And of course, she's like dressed to the nines at this like shitty little golf course.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
Mini golf course. And so she makes this comment about fat people. And she makes this comment like, it's their fault.
Yeah.
Like if you shove your face with this all day, every day, then yeah, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, is she trying to relate to him?
Mm-hmm.
Because he's so horrible. Yeah. Like she said, because it seems like a little out of character for her to be all of a sudden be like, oh, fat people.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, she's kind of a upper echelon, very thin,
waspy,
thin privilege, waspy kind of gal. But we don't see her make any of those comments anywhere else in the film. So I'm like, oh, she's trying to connect with Kevin by being nasty. Right?
Yeah, I think it's by being nasty. I also think it's just like it was one of the first time in the films where like it wasn't like she was trying to train him or trying to raise him.
Right.
It was just them trying to connect. You know, and even if you continue on that in that scene in the film, she was literally, I think she was trying to connect with him, because the next scene is like they go to dinner and she was like, any boys or any girls you're interested in? How's school going? What? And just trying to do that normal. And he just like cuts through the bullshit. And it's just like, next you're going to ask me about drugs. Next you're going to ask me about what girl am I fucking? And next you're going to ask me, like, let's cut the shit. So yes, clearly she was trying her hardest to connect with her child,
mm-hmm.
And make a moment with him, which I was just like, why?
Right.
Clearly he's not interested.
This ain't it. Yeah. So a theme I want to discuss is what we've been kind of talking about this whole time about, is this in her head or is this really happening? And so I think for me being a woman, one of my worst fears, and I know this is true for a lot of women, is being believed. And it's not necessarily just like your experiences with like men or, but it's you're hysterical, you're irrational, you're overplaying this, you're being overdramatic, all of those narratives that are put on women a lot.
Right.
And so like, I am looking at this being like, oh my gosh, what if this was my life and my spouse was like, boys will be boys. That's just what they do. Yeah. Like, you're being too hard on him. Like, I feel like I would go crazy. And are we seeing that in the film?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And then I would like to attach that to another theme.
Do.
Of like nature versus nurture.
Oh, love it.
I mean, this is what this movie is playing with. Absolutely. It's like, is Kevin naturally, was he born this way? Or is it because of how he was nurtured? Which again connects to, it's always a woman's fault. Either she birthed, I mean, God or genetics, but still it came out of her. She birthed a psychopath.
So the fault is assigned to her.
Yes. Or she raised a monster. And you can see this again with the town. Like she, so again, as we said, it's these cut scenes between either the past, like you're moving forward in the past, or you see her right now. And when it's in the present, the town hates her. One of the first scenes you see, you see her coming out of her house, this little shack that's terrible looking. Yeah. And there's red paint all over her car. Again, we see the color red, red paint over her house. Mm-hmm. She goes to this travel agency to like work there. They're just like all looking at her like ill, gross. And the woman who manages the place, she's like, as long as you can type, I guess you can have a job. She walks out and she immediately gets slapped in the face by this random woman. While she's like leaving her job. So it's just hatred of this town, of either because she created a monster, she either raised a monster or birthed a monster.
Right.
So it's always this constant blame and never this belief of like, it wasn't your fault.
Right.
It was never your fault.
Well, and so
there's nothing you could have done.
Right. There's nothing. And so what do you think? Was he born that way?
I think this film is a perfect combination of both. Like, honestly, like, I'm not, and again, just because you made mistakes in raising a child does not mean it's your fault. But the reality is it's just the perfect storm of either of genetics or hormonal imbalance within the child. And then just circumstances happening.
Right.
You know what I mean? Not her not being able, those two not being able to attach, regardless of her fault or not, the lack of attachment still probably helped.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And there's nothing anyone could have done. I think it's both.
Okay. So in the lines of like the hate, right? Because we see this in multiple instances. She goes to the grocery store and then through the vignettes and the flashbacks and the flash forwards, if you will, we see that, okay, these are parents of children that were killed by Kevin, right?
Or injured.
Or injured. So presumably we see the woman that slaps her right after she leaves the travel agency is probably one of the mothers, right? We see this other woman in the grocery store that like
breaks
all the eggs. And then she's like, I'm just going to take them as they are. Eva's like, no, it's okay. I don't want a new dozen. I'll just take them.
Yeah.
Right. So she wants to leave as soon as possible. So it's those kinds of things because she's lost her daughter and her husband because her son killed them. She's obviously not in a state of mind where like I can see after such a traumatic event, like the paranoia of thinking that everyone is looking at you all the time. That's where I can shift my, okay, I'm looking at this through a realistic lens and more of a her lens thing where I can see like really like I'm like, this is not a small town. Yet all of these random people in the travel agency are just staring at you when they walk in. Like, that doesn't seem realistic to me, right?
Yeah, and even the scene, like, not to say it couldn't happen, but the Christmas party scene, she has a coworker who clearly throughout the movie, you see them not so much speaking, but you see them, like, flirting. Like, there's some tension there.
There's
some potential, like, chemistry there.
Yes.
So then there's a Christmas party. Everyone's super drunk. She's sitting there. He comes up to her, ask her to dance.
And she's
like, no, thank you. No, I'm not interested. And then he, like, goes to her and he's like, you fucking bitch. Who do you think will ever want you again? And it's just this, like, at first you're like, holy, this is terrible. Because like, yeah, absolutely. Like, it's believable that a man would say that to her. But then again, it does go into question of like, are you sure? Or did you, what is, I don't know.
Right.
And it goes again. I love this movie because it's so smart and making this question of like, how do we treat women when they make mistakes, and I'm making air quotes.
Yeah.
Or there's controversy around them.
Right. You or know, their family.
Family.
Right.
And it's so interesting. Like, I was racking my brain. And I was trying to think about like, do we ever hear about the mothers or the parents of children who commit mass murder in schools?
No, but a movie I'd really like to see. There's actually two movies by this name. It's called Beautiful Boy. And one just came out recently with Timothée Chalamet and Steve Carell.
Yeah.
But there's one from several years ago. I think Maria Bello plays the mother, where, you know, cops come to their door. I've just seen the trailer. Cops come to the door. They see there's been a school shooting on the news, and they see the cops are like, oh my gosh, my son is dead. And they say, no, your son's a shooter.
Yeah.
And so that is the only film that I know of.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen it.
Yeah. So, this is why I really enjoy this film, because you get to see like, what does it look like? You know what I mean? Yeah. For a parent who has to deal with that and take the blame and take the grief. And again, going back to the color throughout the film, there's all this red, and she's always constantly cleaning her house. She's trying to scrub the red off, trying to take the paint off, clearly trying to absolve herself of her sins.
Right.
And the reality is, it's like she scrubs, the next day there's more paint. Right. She scrubs another area and there's more paint. And she comes to grief. Comes to terms with like she can never be forgiven.
Right.
She'll
never forgive herself.
She'll never forgive herself, and the town will never forgive herself.
No. Right. Would you move?
Hell yeah, I'd be running like that's the other
I
thing.
Would move.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of there.
That's the one thing we also should mention. Like the only reason why she stays is so she could be next to Kevin, which is like the part where I'm like, just
get
like,
the fuck out of there.
Why are you still here? Why are you
Yeah, that's And it's like, okay, look, you and I can't pretend to know what it's like to go through something like that. And,
I'll never know.
All of that. But I would get as far away from that place as possible. Because we do see Eva visit Kevin twice, right?
Yes.
And something that she says to him the second time we see the visit, and it's right when he's about to leave the juvenile detention center and go somewhere else, like some sort of facility.
Like, but
like a mental institution because he was tried as a minor.
Yes.
And
he
did on purpose.
He was high on Prozac. He did it right before his like, was he almost like 18 or something?
He wasn't 18. Yeah.
He was almost like 17 or something.
Almost 17.
He did it right before his 17th birthday. So they couldn't try him as an adult. He was high on Prozac. He engineered the killing of his family and his fellow peers. So that way he couldn't, he could escape it.
Exactly. So kind of like one last fuck you, essentially. Yes. And so, of course,
I want to get back to that. We can talk about it towards the end. I want to get back to why he did what the ending, why he killed everybody. I want your opinion.
Oh, okay. Because I have a thought as well.
Yeah.
But,
cool.
Okay. But before we get to that, the last thing I'll say about kind of the like, why are you staying? Right. Like, why are you sticking around? Like, why? Like, you've been detached from your son since he was born. Why wouldn't you leave?
Yeah. Perfect escape.
Why wouldn't you leave? I just don't know.
Right. Well, especially since So backing up a little bit in the film, there's, we see it's like Christmas. Their daughter receives like a gerbil or a guinea pig.
Oh.
And then all of a sudden goes missing.
Right. And then you can see that he like literally like put it down the sink and like turned the garbage disposal on.
Yeah. And killed it.
And killed it.
He mains his sister.
Yeah.
And she loses an eye because of him.
Yeah.
And Eva clearly blames him. Like she knows you are the one that killed the gerbil. You're the one that
was supposed to be watching your sister. Yeah.
Injured your sister. Franklin is like, oh no, it's not him. You can't blame him. Blah, 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 blah.
He has no remorse for the sister.
Yeah. And so it's clearly like after that incident, and then you find out that he kills your husband and your child, it's like, why don't you go?
Right.
For me, I honestly think it's the guilt I think she wants to know, and we see towards the end, she, the last thing she asks him is like, why? Why did you do this? She needs to know.
Yeah. Look me in the eye and tell me why you did it.
Why you did
it. Yeah. Right.
And I also think it's the guilt of, like we said, like nature versus nurture. She is blaming herself. Mm-hmm. Again, going back to her scrubbing and cleaning and all the red. This is
washing off the sins.
Yes. It's her greatest sin is her child.
Yeah.
It's her greatest sin is her child.
That is a really good and way to put it.
You know, I mean, if we take it back to this kind of biblical, if you really want to go to it, if you really want to go there, take it back to this kind of Judeo-Christian, like biblical, like aspect. Like, what is, you know, I mean, what is, how is Eve punished in the garden? I'm testing you.
How is Eve punished in the garden? Oh.
They're kicked out of the garden, but what is Eve's punishment? Man is, Adam says he has to toil the earth.
Oh shit! I wasn't paying attention. In the-
Eve's punishment is pain during childbirth, and she has she bleeds once a month. So yeah.
This is my whole problem with organized religion.
so there's this like tie to Christianity. Right. Like it's the sin of the woman is to always it's pain. Associated with
physical pain,
emotional, spiritual,
associated with
child rearing and child rearing in general.
Yeah.
If you look throughout the Bible, every time a woman has pain, it's always nine times out of 10 is either giving birth or it's connected to their children.
Right.
And so this is the woman's greatest sin is her child or sin or the thing that she has through her whole life. Her greatest pain is always her child.
Right. Always.
Yeah. So I found it fascinating. I think she was just so absolved. There's a scene where those Christian missionaries come up to her door and they're like, do you know where you're going to go?
In the afterlife?
In the afterlife or on Judgment Day. And she's like, oh yeah, of course, hell.
I'm going to hell.
Yeah, I'm complete damnation. And it's this funny scene because you're like, oh my God, hilarious. But then you quickly look like she's, oh no, mama, you really...
You think that's what's
going to... Yeah, you're going
absolutely.
To hell.
Absolutely. Okay, well, let's talk about the end. I know we have like, you know, 7-ish more minutes. Let's talk about the end because I have a question for you as well.
Ask your question.
Okay. So in the end, okay, well, let's back up. Throughout the scene, we see kind of like, okay, obviously something terrible has happened. There's these sirens, there's these lights, you know, it goes quiet, but we don't know what it is until the very end, right? Kevin killing his classmates, right? And so, you know, we see that throughout. We see her getting the call at work. You know, something's happened. She goes to the high school, blah, 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 blah. It's not until, and then we hear the call to Franklin, you know, please pick up, please pick up. You know, at this time, we don't know that Kevin has killed his brother his father and his sister, right? And he kills everybody the same way with a bow and arrow. He kills his dad and his sister in their backyard with multiple arrows.
Jesus.
So here's... It's really more of what there's one scene that I wish was played and it doesn't exist, but in my mind, I wish it did.
Oh.
I really, because we always see him being buddy buddy with his dad and the, you know, Eva being like, what the fuck? You know, I have no love for this child, no connection to this child, essentially. And we see that Franklin doesn't really believe her for whatever reason. Say it's her perception, but let's say for the sake of this argument, it's true. He doesn't see because Kevin doesn't present himself to his father the way he presents himself to the mother, right? Mm-hmm. So let's, for this argument, we're going to say, yes, it's all true. Franklin does not see it. He doesn't really support his wife. He doesn't really believe her, right? I would have loved to see a scene of the final moments of the father's life. Of him coming to the realization that I was wrong.
No, see, I don't think you're.
I would have loved
that.
To see
I know
that.
You would. I know you would love, but you would never get that.
I know.
Why? Because you're watching the movie through Eva's eyes. You only see. Yeah, I get why.
But I would have loved to see nothing really to do with the sister. I don't really need that.
I don't care about her.
Well, no, I don't. I just don't want to see like her get killed. I saw the aftermath, but like. But I would have loved to see the realization. And I know that's not how the movie is played, but man, would I have loved to see that.
Yeah.
You know, that was my thing.
I didn't like Franklin's character, to be honest.
Well, he wasn't really.
Like, I just felt like.
Present.
He wasn't really present. And I can't tell it's because it was written that way and they were playing it that way. Or if it just, I can't tell why. I wish he had more of like, a larger presence. I wish his character had a little bit more dimension because he was so flat. I think the ending was so brilliant because you see the final last scene, you see Eva say, you know, why did you do it? And he's like, I don't even know why I didn't anymore.
He said, I used to know. I used to think I knew why.
Yeah. Cause there's a 2 year
gap.
Right. You see, so this is happening within the 2 year span between when he murders everybody and then at this moment. So he is about to turn 18 at that point.
Yeah.
And he's about to go to this federal kind of mental institution. And so you see her like finally, they embrace each other. The first time they are actually like touching in a loving way.
Yeah.
And then you see her like walk through this, like, you know what I mean? This bathing in this white light. And it's kind of like her absolvement of her sins. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was this like, again, it goes back to this. He wanted his mother's attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And she wanted the freedom to release herself of this kind of pain and torment.
Yeah.
And what's most fascinating is that you see her prepare a room in her new shack that's the exact same, like, piece of furniture for piece of furniture of his bedroom in their old house.
Yeah.
So she's preparing herself and her house to have him back in her life. What did you think about that?
That was so confusing to me, and I'm so glad you brought that up because, like, is that what she's doing? Right. So we see her going upstairs. It looks exactly the same as his bedroom that we see it really more not when he's in high school. I mean, presumably that's still his bedroom, but like we see it more when he's like 8 years old. Right. That's his bedroom. She even puts the Robin Hood book there, which we know it's like your inspiration for all of this is this book, right? Yeah. The archery and all of that. And I'm looking at it like, okay, so am I forgetting what happened when I watched it the first time? Like, is he coming back? And then we know, no, he's not going to be back for a long time, right? We have no idea, like, how long he's going to be in a mental institution, right?
Yeah, but I think, again, I think she is preparing herself to have her son back in her life. I think that's what she wants. She wants her kid. I think that's the only attachment she has to her husband, to her daughter, to the life that she knew. I honestly think she's preparing to have him back.
That's interesting. I wonder if, like, she knows that because she can never forgive herself, that two things. She knows she can never forgive herself, so it's kind of like might as well have this person as my only attachment to the things I once loved.
Yeah.
Or is this how strong a mother's love is to their child?
Yeah. I think it is, because there is this scene, I can't remember.
Or both.
Yeah, I think there is a scene I want to touch on real quick to this mother love, because there's a scene where she's sitting in the jail waiting to like see him, and she's just sitting there, and this woman comes up and she's like bawling her eyes out. It's the only scene you see her interacting with another woman,
right?
I'm outside like her boss, and like there's no dialogue, and they just hold hands.
Yeah,
and it is this,
and
like,
she initiates the hand holding with the stranger.
Yeah, and it's this connection of like, we don't know why this woman is crying so much about her son. Her son could have done the same thing, because your son could have been gay. But it is this connection of like, a mother is always attached to their child.
Right.
Regardless if they want to or not. Like, mother is, in our minds, a mother is always attached to their child.
Right.
And I want to touch again, this is going to be probably one of my last comments about this movie. The power of this movie is not the dialogue. This movie lacks so much dialogue, almost to a fault to a degree.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I will give it, because it's such a good movie, that it's so powerful, because you could literally watch this movie with the sounds off.
Don't you feel absolutely.
Like you could just watch
absolutely
scenes and listen to the soundtrack.
Yes.
Because the soundtrack of this movie, it just pairs so perfectly.
It's amazing.
They do this really great job of playing these kind of upbeat, happy songs. And they either like really emphasize certain words to attach to what's happening in the film, or they just twist it just a little bit. They slow it down, like turn and remix it just enough.
Yeah.
It's a little bit creepy or a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
like, because it's such a juxtaposition, right? You have this incredibly devastating situation where like you see a mother not connecting with her child, or he's just done something really defiant or terrible before the big finale.
Yeah.
And then there's this upbeat song. So it's almost disturbing, because you're like, these things don't match.
Yeah.
My feeling does not match this song.
I want to touch on this disturbing part real quick.
Okay.
What would you call this genre of film? What genre would this film fall into?
like psychological thriller.
Interesting.
Noir.
Interesting.
Indie noir psychological thriller.
Interesting.
Why? What about you?
I consider this an indie horror film.
Oh, okay.
This is an indie horror film. I watched this really, I can't remember the person's name, but I watched this really good YouTube video, and he brought up the fact that this film reminds us a lot of like movies like Children of the Corn and like those 80 movies where like the kids are smarter than everybody and they're literally murdering a whole town. And it at the time, I mean, in the 80s, late 70s, 80s, you know, you just got done with the hippie movie in the sexual revolution, and you have all these young people like, you know, running in the streets yelling about, yes,
yeah,
and they're way more intelligent than their parents. They have access to way more knowledge than their parents, and you have these parents terrified. So then you see it again, you know, and horror does this really good job of talking about like social political issues and framing it in this really like way that's tangible that people can actually absorb because it's so removed from reality.
Right.
So then you see it again around this time frame. This is before Sandy Hook, but this is like a look, you know, I mean, a couple, maybe 5-10 years after Columbine.
Yeah, because Sandy Hook was 2012.
Yeah.
And this was the year before.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so you have this kind of acknowledgement of like, you have these killer kids. And you have these kids who are, again, smarter than their parents, know more than their parents, have access to way more resources than their parents. And they're murdering their town. They're murdering the people around them.
Right.
And so I see it as this, again, trying to how in a much more like tangible, like on the pulse way of like, how do we kind of acknowledge and start working through childhood murder? Like, how do we acknowledge these psychopaths? How do we acknowledge these killers? So yeah, I see this as a horror movie.
That's very interesting.
I was like, I watched this movie in the middle of it, and I was disturbed for sure.
Sure.
It was disturbing.
Totally.
And it wasn't even like you didn't see a lot of blood. I don't think you saw any blood.
Yeah, you saw some blood.
You saw a little bit of blood.
Yeah, you saw some
blood. But you didn't see actual murder.
You saw the aftermath.
You saw the aftermath, and that's about it.
Yeah.
And I think it was just the tension of
it did a lot with a little.
Yes. And I think it's Tilda Swinton's ability to just like her body. It's not even so much her face. Her face doesn't really change. Like, she shows expression on her face, but it's very minute.
Her body language
just tells a story.
Yeah.
And then she's the master. She said in an interview, she's like, I hate a script that has too much dialogue. She's like, I'd rather just show you.
Is that a Scandinavian for you or what?
I don't like to talk. I just want to.
Seriously.
I just want to show you. I.
Which is amazing.
Yes.
Yeah. She's so good.
I think it's so important that this movie was directed and written by a woman.
Yes.
Because I think if it was a man, I don't think you would see this film being as successful as it was. You could take that to the bank.
And you could take that to the bank. My recommendation for you is to watch You Were Never Really Here, the other film that Lynn Ramsey did. And that was more recent in 2017.
Yeah.
I'd really like to hear what you thought about that.
I can do that for you.
Yeah, thank you.
I can do that for you.
Thank you so much. Well, gosh.
That was a good one.
That was a good one. Look how much we agree.
I know. We're on a roll over here.
I think we're going to be on a roll on our next episode.
Oh, gosh.
Okay, well, we're going to sign off for now. We know exactly what our next episode is going to be because we're about to record it.
No, you're supposed to keep it mysterious.
Oh, mysterious.
No. We can talk about it. Our next movie is The Woman in the Window.
2021.
Yeah, it's a brand new movie. Another kind of psychological thriller.
Yes.
We're on like a theme over here.
Mm-hmm.
We
love a theme. We truly, truly do. Thanks for listening.
Listen,
thank you, Speak Boise.
Thank you, Speak Boise. And everyone in the PNW, stay cool out there. Good God. Satan's asshole is wide open on our foreheads.
Get your water. Please don't walk
don't
your dogs.
Outside. Don't walk your animals. Just keep
them inside.
Don't
ever leave them in the car in this heat.
You're going to have high energy bills for 3 months. Just budget for it.
Take ownership of, you know, stand up for yourself if you work outside.
Yeah. Tell them hell no.
Tell them
hot.
Hell no.
It's hot.
It's too hot.
Stay cool, Boise. Love you.
Love you.
Bye.
Bye. Hi, this is Erin.
And this is Colin.
And you've been listening to
Let's Hear It for the Girls.
It's always a great time at Speak Studios in Boise, Idaho, and we hope you enjoy learning about the girls.
Now listen, you better like, subscribe, and review us on all major platforms. We'll see you next time.
And thanks for listening.
Bye.